Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Market View. And today we have on the line a very familiar voice. If you are, a usual friend of Money FM 89.3, we have Sunny Hamid, Director for Wealth Management of Financial Alliance. Hello, Sunny.
Hi.
Okay, I hope you've had your lunch.
Chicken rice ahead of the ban.
It's not a ban. I think we have to be very clear. It's not a ban. We are just, we just have lesser stock of fresh chicken. We still have lots of frozen chicken out there. In fact, some people actually say frozen chicken may potentially be even more hygienic because, you know, they're frozen immediately after slaughter, right? So, okay.
I agree.
Okay. But we've got some, we'll talk more about food a bit later. Let's look at those numbers that came out this morning from the MTI. Help us understand, what can you tell us about these numbers, about Singapore's economy? And how come, although the numbers seem to be really, really quite encouraging, why did the market seem to only have a fairly lukewarm response to it?
We have to understand that such economic figures, especially GDP, these are backward-looking figures, tells us basically what's happening up to this point in time. Although one can project into the future, when you look into the next couple of quarters, it does seem as though it's going to be quite challenging. We're having softer figures over in the U.S., in terms of many aspects. Housing prices have started to probably peak. We're seeing the stock market there coming off. When you talk about a certain batch of data that's called leading indicators, those are softening, foretelling basically probably slower growth in the quarters ahead. Mm-hmm. Even data pertaining to such things as loans, and that is what we call credit impulse. Mm. Fresh loans going into the system, that also is coming up. So when all of that is put together, it really does look as though it's challenging. People in the U.S. are already talking about either a recession or even stagflation. Mm. So it's dynamic in that sense. It's not static. So I think the cautious tone, I think from the market itself, is portraying that.
I suppose it should be actually encouraging as well that our market investors, including retail investors, are casting their eye on the longer term horizon rather than just the immediate, you know, happy news and then everybody just, you know, go crazy, right? Yeah. Right. But we also have some appetite depriving news, right? You know, following what Malaysia said about having to stop, right? The export of chicken to Singapore, at least from the month of June, the temporary stoppage. We are also hearing from India that they're restricting sugar export, which actually, to be honest, I don't think is such a bad thing, you know, because we know what sugar does to health. But it's also banned wheat sales. And that's just following news that it's banned wheat sales just over a week ago. So looking at this rising global
trend.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. You know, it could also worsen inflation woes for some parts of you know, the global markets, right? I mean, for the countries that are doing these things, they are trying to manage the surging prices in their domestic market. But outside of it, like for example, in Singapore, temporarily, we will see a surge in prices because of the lower supply, right?
It's unavoidable. I think and even when you look at what's being done by many of these countries, you more or less can understand because, again, over and over again throughout history, whenever you've got rising prices, whenever domestic supply seems to be insufficient, I think it's only natural for governments to protect their residents or their own citizens by imposing these kind of restrictions. Mm. After all, citizens are voters. And you really don't want to.
And even on the plane, they tell you, you know, take care of yourself first before looking after your children or whatever, if something were to happen, right?
But overall, it's still bad news for the overall inflationary picture. We have basically disrupted supply chain, and on top of that, we have basically demand coming in from the reopening across the world post COVID, and then throw on top of that more supply disruption because of the Ukraine-Russian war. Both of them are quite big soft and hard commodity producers. Mm. And now you have countries individually restricting exports of vital, essential commodities. So throw everything into the mix. It does suggest that basically, especially for soft commodities, that basically prices may remain elevated for quite some time.
I don't know. Have you been to the supermarket in the last 48 hours? I haven't, so and I'm going to go check it out later today to see if the shelves are still, you know, adequately stocked, right? Okay, but looking at, you know, the sort of moves that that other governments are doing, surging prices locally, and you know, what tools would does the MAS still have, or what do you think it'll do next?
So for the MAS, for Singapore, basically, it's quite unique in terms of its monetary tool. Unlike many conventional central banks that use basically interest rates as a monetary tool, Singapore uses its currency as a monetary tool. So Singapore doesn't have a monetary policy based on interest rate. It has a monetary policy based on its exchange rate. Meaning, and why? It's quite clear because Singapore exports the majority of things that it needs. So in order not to...
imports the majority of things that we need.
Yes. So in order not to import inflation, basically Singapore has to strengthen its currency. So by strengthening the currency, it imports more cheaply, basically. So with a stronger currency, there's less risk of importing inflation. So what we will see and what has already been done is so-called guiding the Sing dollar to on a strengthening path. And I think that's going to continue ahead, especially as I mentioned, I think there's still a lot of inflation in the pipeline. And I think that will keep this path that the Sing dollar is on, still there. It will remain there.
But pardon me, to clarify, if Singapore were to strengthen its currency, can it do it, in a targeted fashion, where it's strengthening it only against those that we have a strong import relationship with? Or would it also have a knock-on effect to you know, how it stands against, for example, the US dollar, the Australian dollar, etc.?
It's actually strengthened against a basket of goods. There's a particular model called the Singapore Nominal Exchange Rate, Effective Exchange Rate, the near band. So the Sing dollar is not guided against specific currencies, but against a basket of currencies. And from that basket of currencies, one can assume that it is basically denominated according to the trading partners that we have. But of course, not all trading partners are imposing these kind of bans and so on and so forth. So, but by and large, you will see the Sing dollar strengthen against overall most other currencies. And we've seen that against the ringgit, for example. Now, I think if I'm not wrong, it's like 3.19 against the Sing dollar and such. So that will help in terms of bringing in things from Malaysia and more cheaply. But of course, if it's not available, then it's a different story.
So for those foreign trade partners or business partners who are, how would you say, charging us, you know, in Sing dollars, they are at a at an advantage, really, you know, in the local market for them, right? Okay, but let's look at travellers who are looking for favourable exchange rate. It sounds like very good news for them.
Yes, it is. I mean, of course, having a strong Sing dollar means everything else in the world has become cheaper for the Singapore domicile traveller. But it's always, there are always two sides of the story. So on the other hand, it's become more expensive for people to come to Singapore and travel into Singapore itself. And that's for the traveller. I mean, for let's say, for example, an investor itself, Singapore domicile investor will find it a bit challenging, or rather there's headwind going out of Singapore because you are investing in currencies which will probably weaken against the Sing dollar. Well, the opposite side of it is someone who parks their money in Singapore-denominated assets will then gain probably that 2-3% from the strengthening Sing dollar. So we have two sides to the coin for every situation.
But how sustainable is this strengthening of the Sing dollar, a move, right? A strategy, right? How sustainable is it? Because, I think on the ground level, a lot of us might think, hey, you know, that's great. Why don't we just keep it that way, right? So help us understand implications, you know, why it's not a long-term or permanent move even, right? Why is it not great for our economy, investors and businesses? And even, you know, the regular citizen.
Yeah, it's a monetary policy tool. And like all monetary policy tools, they are calibrated according to the the place we are in terms of the business cycle. So in the part where of a business cycle where there's inflation, then monetary policy will be tightened. Interest rates will be hiked in countries which use interest rates. Sing dollar will be strengthened in Singapore itself. And likewise, when there's a need, when inflation is no longer a problem, then monetary policy could be loosened. So in countries using interest rates will be lowered. In Singapore, the currency will be actually weaker. So it is, again, not cast in stone that it will forever be the case. It really depends on the environment, whether inflation is strong or weak, or whether the economy needs a boost or not, and so on and so forth.
Okay. Then, right now, let's switch gears a little. Again, take a step back and look at the macro picture, right? ASEAN and China, I think... In recent days, right, in the past 6 months to a year at least, you know, as far as the approach to COVID-19 and the economy reopening, borders reopening, we are quite divergent, right, with China. So how do you think we can move forward with this, you know, to ensure that there is continued growth and prosperity, shared prosperity, right? How can ASEAN use the hosting of G20, the APEC summits this year to enhance its role on the global stage and keep, you know, China as an engaged and interested partner?
I think these sessions or these kind of summits like G20, APEC, even the ASEAN summit itself now takes a more important role, play a more important role, because by and large, from a 30,000 feet viewpoint, globalization has come to a halting screech or stop. A lot of blocks are being formulated at this particular point. You know, we're not seeing globalization as it was, as even some people are saying we've come to the end of globalization. So right now we could see smaller blocks coming to into being, and I think that's where, for example, ASEAN in itself, you know, has a huge population, huge market, but never probably had seen the strong need to accelerate this trading pact, very much like what the EU has. Because it still could trade very freely with the rest of the world. But if the rest of the world starts to restrict, have protectionism, and this and that, then I think it becomes very important that the regional blocks even like APEC or even the G20 itself, become more important.
How do you see China moving forward on its COVID policy? Do you think eventually, like by the end of the year, if, you know, it's still not COVID zero, they might actually wind back and say, hey, all right, COVID zero, impossible task, you know, we will have a modified target, you know?
I doubt they will actually officially say that it you know, we've failed in the task. It's not very China-like. They will start to loosen the policy, which we already have seen gradually in certain places, amid so-called inverted brackets improving numbers. So I think that will be the case. I think it's very clear that the economy itself and to a large extent society, it just can't be kept in that kind of condition over a long period of time. There already been backlash, both socially and also from the economic perspective. I think Beijing understands that, and I think they will gradually start to do it, but at their own pace.
That certainly is quite a relief, because from supply chain to components to tourism, China and its people are a big contributor to the global market. Sunny, as always, thank you so much. Great to have spoken to you. Thank you so much for the insight.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Sunny Hamid, Director for Wealth Management, Financial Alliance on Market View.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.